Today on Maine Calling, PFAS and firefighting. We've learned a lot in recent years about the health dangers posed by a class of chemicals known as PFAS. Much of the attention so far has been on agriculture and PFAS contamination from sludge spread routinely on fields. Then, last August, firefighting foam was accidentally released in a hangar on the former Brunswick Naval Air Station, contaminating ponds nearby. And now we're learning more about the risk firefighters face from PFAS. I'm Jennifer Rooks. More than 9,000 people serve as firefighters in Maine. Most have trained with PFAS foam and have used it fighting fires. There's also PFAS in their equipment, and it can get into a surrounding soil and water. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the latest information about PFAS and firefighting and what can be done. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. We are learning more about how the toxic PFAS and firefighting foam poses health risks to firefighters. However, reducing or eliminating it can be costly and difficult. Today, we're going to learn how fire departments and communities all over Maine are trying to deal with this problem. Joining me for the hour, Russ Osgood, Town of Occoquan Fire Chief and Vice President of Education for the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. He was a firefighter for more than 30 years. Dr. Judith Graber is an occupational and environmental epidemiologist, an associate professor in the Department of Biostatistics and Epidemiology in the Rutgers School of Public Health. And David LaFountain is a former Maine State Senator from Winslow and also a retired fire chief. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, or you can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you all for joining us today, but we're going to first turn to Marina Schaffler, who's an environmental writer. Her recent project for the Pulitzer Center is an in-depth series of articles about PFAS in firefighting, and it was recently published in the Maine Morning Star. Thanks so much for calling in, Marina.
Thank you, Jennifer.
It's a whole series of articles you've written, very in-depth. Why did you decide to delve into this topic? What did you see or hear that alarmed you?
In reporting on PFAS, it really struck me that as much as Maine has done to address PFAS in products and this PFAS that got spread through sludge and affected the agricultural community, beyond agriculture, there hasn't been a lot of attention to PFAS exposure in workplace settings. And there are quite a number of those. And in firefighting, that's affecting not just paid people in the workplace, but a huge number of volunteers. More than 90% of the fire departments in Maine are staffed mostly or entirely by volunteers.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of volunteer firefighters and just a lot of people who volunteer as firefighters or work as firefighters. A 2016 study showed almost 10,000 people in Maine at that moment working as firefighters. You learned so much from researching this series. What stands out to you as the thing that you just feel like everybody in the public needs to know?
I think what struck me was the need fire departments have for support in transitioning off PFAS, that this is not something that they can be left to do on their own. You know, this has just been a series, not only the PFAS in the firefighting foam, but in their turnout gear. There was just news this morning that it's not just in the jackets and the pants, which had come out a while ago, and that more PFAS comes out as those degrade. The news came out with a new report this morning that it's also in gloves, a little bit in the hoods. So, you know, it's just been a series of real challenges, and the fire service has a lot of other challenges beyond this toxic exposure. So the need for more support for them in this transition.
Yeah, you're talking about this news that just came out this morning. I'm imagining that this is challenging to report because so much is being learned all the time.
Yes, the series was called A Fire Hose of Forever Chemicals, and it really does feel like that. There's not enough research on a lot of these exposures, and so, you know, they, like the report this morning, they came out saying, you know, we found the PFAS in these new aspects of the protective gear, but we're going to do another study now to find out whether wear and tear releases more of that. So, you know, it's also a real cloud hanging over the fire service, I think, in terms of knowing they have exposure, but not necessarily knowing how much and what the impacts are going to be.
Marina, your reporting has been published now in the Maine Morning Star. We have a link to that on the webpage today for the Maine Calling program. Are you going to continue to report on this?
I hope so.
Marina Schaffler, thank you so much for joining us. She's the environmental writer who has written a special series on PFAS and firefighting for the Maine Morning Star and the Pulitzer Center. And I know you interviewed several of our guests today. I appreciate your work. I'm going to turn to you, Russ Osgood. How and when, if you can explain to us, is foam used instead of water in firefighters, in fighting fires? When do you make that choice?
Sure. So the AFFF foam is the foam that is really of the concern with PFAS. So that would be used on a Class B fire, something like a fuel-fed fire, like aircraft emergencies, gasoline tankers, things of that nature. So in the past, for many years, we would have one type of foam that was kind of a combination foam that would be an AFFF foam with kind of a Class A, which is like wood and paper products mixed. And the problem with that is that it contains those PFAS compounds. So we have gotten away from that now. So really the only time now you will see a product or a foam that contains AFFF would be in an airport environment. Really, that would be the only time today we would use it.
Okay, you said today. So you've been, I said at the beginning of the program, you were a firefighter for 30 years. How often do you think you use this foam in your career, what we now know as dangerous foam, either for training or for fighting fires?
A lot. I think every firefighter could tell you a story of when they use this foam, either in a training environment to see how you could lay down a foam blanket to protect a Class B fire, maybe at a gathering and you made a great big foam blanket for the kids to play in. Unfortunately, we were sold a bill of goods that the stuff was perfectly safe. There was no issues. You know, the salesmen would come in and put their fingers right in it. See, it's just like soap. It's no big deal. That is now we know not quite accurate.
Well, Dr. Graber, I'll turn to you. We do know that firefighters have a higher cancer rate than the population at large. I always thought that was because they inhaled so much smoke in their work. Now that we're doing more work, how much of a role do you believe that this foam that had PFAS chemicals in it, plays in this high cancer rate?
That's an important question, Jennifer, and thank you so much for pulling this panel together and addressing this really important issue. Firefighters are indeed exposed to a lot of different carcinogenic materials, as you say, in that smoke and soot. There's all sorts of things that cause cancer, right? There's polyacyclic hydrocarbons, and there's also in the firehouses diesel exhaust. So there's a whole mix. But PFAS is certainly an important part of that mix. And we know that PFAS, among many health effects, cancer is one of them. The higher levels of PFAS you get, the more you see some of these health effects. And it's not just cancer. PFAS can increase occurrence of bad cholesterol, bad lipids in the blood. It can increase problems with kidneys and liver. It can cause smaller birth size, such an important problem, right? So many health effects impacted by affected by PFAS levels, and many of which are concerns to firefighters, right? But what's important is that when we clean up PFAS in the firehouse, we also clean up a lot of these other exposures. And importantly, we hear the word forever chemicals a lot, right? And they're forever chemicals because they stay around. They've been producing these things since the early 1950s, and they're in our environment, they're in everybody. But importantly, when we reduce exposure, we can reduce the amount of PFAS in our bodies. So they're forever chemicals, but they're not forever in our bodies. And I think that's a really important point.
David, Russ made it sound as though in most places this particular kind of foam is no longer being used. And I'm wondering, is that the case? Because I know that so many fire departments in Maine are strapped for cash and this is an expensive prospect. How many do you think, and do we even know, have been in a position where they've been able to replace their firefighting foam with something that is not toxic?
It's a process that's going on now, even quantifying where we sit as the fire service, how many gallons of foam we have, where it is, has been a tough nut to crack. And replacing the foam, I was talking to my old department in Waterville to get the latest prices and what we have for grant issues because nobody's going to do it without a grant, a federal grant. So I would just like to say that what we're looking at reimbursement rates at this point in time is in the neighborhood of $40 a gallon to help replace a jug of foam, which is actually $185 a whack now, if you're going to buy the non-PFAS foam. There has been attempts in the past to reel this problem in. Some places have treated it like an unfunded mandate and chosen not to participate. There is a lot more work that needs to be done, and I appreciate the work that Marina has done and Judith has done to help bring this information to light. When I joined the department, we used a different foam. We started off with protein foam and Navy nozzles, and we were glad to see this AFFF come because, first of all, it didn't stink like protein foam did. It actually smelled good. And it was much easier to use. None of us knew the risk. When I joined the department, firefighters were known for having heart attacks, not for getting cancer. Nowadays, unfortunately, I've joined the club too. I worked for Maine Fire Training and Education, training around the state, and it was necessary. Every firefighter had to train on how to use foam. So, I don't think it was until 1985-ish we were doing training in Wells when it was the first time that we were brought to light that, hey, this foam we're not going to be training with because it's going to get into the groundwater. They were really sensitive. DEP kind of warned us back then, but it took a while to grab
Yeah.
and get this attention, going in the right direction.
And I wanted to ask you, Russ, if you feel as though there is now widespread awareness among firefighters about the danger, and how seriously that's taken. I mean, we're talking about a group of people who willingly put their lives on the line for others all the time. Is there sometimes a bit of a nonchalance about this danger?
Yeah, I think there is. I think that the message is getting out that PFAS is an issue. And not just foam, it's there's dozens of other ways that we get exposed to PFAS, even in our ordinary lives. And there's a lot of other risks that firefighters are facing, right, in the fire service. So when we teach firefighters, we try to teach them to mitigate all of those risks, starting with their own personal health. We have everyday asks like not drinking, not excessively drinking, being sun smart, prioritizing your sleep, get physical exercise, eat right, stay away from tobacco, de-stress your life, and access your healthcare regularly to, take care of those modifiable risk factors because as firefighters, we have a lot of things that we're exposed to that we can't control. And PFAS in a lot of cases is one of those. Departments with turnout gear that have PFAS in it, you're talking $5,000 a person to replace turnout gear with PFAS free. Mostly at a minimum when you're
And
talking hood.
when you say turnout gear, what you mean is the big coat and the big
Yeah.
boots and the big pants that you're going to wear.
Yeah.
And so we're not just talking about the foam. We're talking about, I just want to be really clear here, inside the fabric, part of what makes it fireproof or fire persistent is PFAS.
Right. And I think a lot of that, the gear that we're wearing could be a big portion of our exposure to PFAS. PFAS containing foams are in my department and departments I've been involved in used very infrequently. Basically, because we know that they're not good for the environment now. When we do use them, there's a reporting mechanism that you have to report them in. And we've mo a lot of places have replaced it with Class A foam, which doesn't contain PFAS, and use that primarily for anything other than a Class B fire. And in some cases, when you talk to folks across the country, they're just not using it at all because it's an environmental bomb, creates big problems. So a gasoline tanker that's on fire, cool it with water and let it burn out. It's maybe the better option.
And I could tell Dr. Graber's dying to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's so important, Russell. Again, the important news is that we've seen studies that when firefighters stop using AFFF, there's a recent study just out of Australia, their levels start to go down. So it's a really important source
When
of
you say their levels
exposure.
start to go down, you mean that when they take their blood, that the levels of
When they take
PFAS
their
and
blood and follow people over time, when firefighters reduce their exposure to AFFF, you start to see those levels in this study in Australia go down. We also see in other studies a strong association between AFFF use and PFAS. That doesn't mean there aren't other important sources. I think the question of whether PFAS gets into firefighters from their gear is an emerging area of study, and we still don't quite understand the extent. We do know, as Russ pointed to, that firefighters get a lot of junk on their gear and on their trucks and on their equipment at fires. And reducing that exposure right after the fire with some well-developed techniques called post-exposure reduction or decon is really helpful and something that's having a lot of uptake both in knowledge and practice in the fire service. Another source of PFAS and other contaminants that I don't think we talk about enough is dust. Dust in the fire station is an important sink for contaminants and toxins and an easy cleanup and something we should be thinking about.
Yeah, and
And the
we do
go
need
ahead.
to go to a break, but what I'm thinking of as you all are talking is, in all the years I've been a reporter and been in fire stations, all that turnout gear is hanging on hooks right out there in the open. The whole idea being that when that bell rings, you can throw on your gear really quickly and jump onto the truck. But that's probably not the best idea, right, Dr. Graber?
That's right. And the current recommendations are to the extent possible to remove that gear into their own areas and keep it away from the areas where firefighters socialize or live in the other parts of the station.
All
That's
right,
exactly
so
right.
much to talk about. We do need to take a quick break. We are talking about firefighting and PFAS and toxic exposure and just so much information emerging. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're discussing how fire departments are trying to deal with PFAS in firefighting foam and gear. With me, Dr. Judith Graber, who's an associate professor at Rutgers in the Department of Biostats and Epidemiology, but she lives here in Maine in Hollowell. David LaFountain, a former state senator and retired fire chief. And Russ Osgood, a Gunquit fire chief who is also with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. Share your comments and questions. Send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Dan Roy, who is the chief of the Monmouth Fire Department. Thanks so much for calling in, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, Jennifer.
Share with us how your fire department is dealing with this growing knowledge about the danger of PFAS.
Yeah, this actually goes back probably about 5 or 6 years that we became familiar with the associated dangers with PFAS in the fire service and some of our equipment. Certainly in the last 4 years since we've been partnering with the Cancer Assessment and Prevention Study with Dr. Judith Graber and Rutgers University, I personally became much more familiar with, the inherent dangers. And I've been sharing that with my firefighters over the last few years. And we continue to implement different practices to try to limit the exposure. We're not quite there, 100%, but we're doing our best with our, limited budgets, for a small town community and small town fire department.
Yeah, you said you're doing your best with your limited budget. What have you been able to do and what have you not been able to do that you would like to do?
So in the last few years, we've been able to purchase through grants, an extractor and a dryer to wash our gear more regularly at the fire station versus having to have it laundered off-site. So that's been a big step in the right direction for having clean gear for our firefighters to don and doff. And I think where we're limited is our old or aging stations. And currently, our central station was built in 1962. So the station is 62 years old, and it's basically just three truck bays and one meeting room. And, we hang our gear on the hooks. I heard you make note of that before going on break, and that describes our station. So our gear is hanging on the hooks in the same truck bays where our dirty trucks come back from a fire call, and we decon our equipment and get it ready for the next call. And our gear is right there, exposed to all the elements from the soot particulates from structure fires. We do our best to gross decon at a fire scene, but you don't get it all. And certainly coming back to our station, we got to do additional cleaning and scrubbing and all that stuff is just going off into the same truck bay where our equipment is stored, where our gear is stored.
Right. I was just thinking, you said you're talking about cleaning, And so, and stop me if I'm wrong. There again is the risk of the firefighters are being exposed again as they're cleaning the equipment. And then the water is that has the PFAS in it from cleaning. Where's that going? Just down the drain?
It's being washed with proper cleaning products in our extractor. As far as the cleaning process, with the washing machine, certainly gross decon at the fire scene. The scene has already been compromised by the structure fire itself. So we're getting probably 80% of the debris off of our gear, but it's not getting it all 100%. So we're transporting it back in our trucks, our apparatus. Some of us in our personal vehicles, such as chief officers. And then when we get back to the station, we do additional cleaning and then hosing it down, which could just run off into the street into the storm drain. But by then, most of it's been already removed from our gear.
But you're just describing this, people in their personal cars. I'm guessing people not able to take showers at the fire station, that kind of thing, just as sort of an illustration of how this is, one of those problems that you might be playing whack-a-mole with. You figure out how to wash your turnout gear, but you've got everything else to deal with. Chief Roy, I just wanted to ask you, what would you like to see happen? What would you like to see the state do? What would you like to see the federal government do? I know that there's a lawsuit against the companies that manufactured this. Do you believe they ought to be paying for fire departments to upgrade?
Well, certainly recently there's been an introduction of PFAS gear that's been brought into the marketplace. And, it's a little bit more of a cost than our standard gear that we're currently purchasing. In fact, I think just a coat and jacket, the last time I purchased gear, it was around $2,700 for coat and jacket. And then if I wanted to, opt to purchase PFAS gear, it'd be right around $3,200. So it's about
$500
difference.
When you say PFAS gear, that means gear that doesn't have PFAS.
PFAS free.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so that's expensive.
It's an additional budget item. It is. And when we're trying to change out gear, we purchase about five to six sets of gear per year. in our department, we have 40 firefighters, and I issue two sets of gear per firefighter. So if they have one being laundered, they still have a second set as a backup in case there's another call that they have to respond to. So, and we have to replace that gear every 10 to 15 years, you know, depending on the quality of the gear and the breakdown. And, you know, so there's NFPA standards that we have to follow in, as far as the life cycle of the gear. And we're trying to just stay on pace and replace the gear every, you know, every few years, you know, with a few new sets of gear. And if we have to purchase PFAS free gear, you know, we might not be able to get five or six sets a year. We might have to drop that down to maybe three or four sets. So it just extends that period of replacement time to get the proper sets of gear. As far as locally, I'd like to see our town support us and build us a new fire station where we could have separate rooms to store our gear separate from the truck bays. I'd like to see shower facilities. We don't have any. We're probably typical of most of your small volunteer fire departments where we don't have shower facilities. You know, that's one of the 11 things covered under the Lavender Ribbon Report is to shower within the hour, you know, to get that soot particulates out of, you know, the pores of our skin. And we can't do that, you know, at our current fire station. We have to actually go home kind of filthy and shower at our own personal homes. And it'd be nice to be able to have shower facilities if we could. So
yeah.
if the government could support us, you know, either, you know, coming out with grant monies or making money available to upgrade stations, you know, that would be great, but it's probably unrealistic to, you know, replace everybody's fire stations. So we have to look for local support for that.
Dan, I really appreciate it. Chief Dan Roy from the town of Monmouth for calling in and sharing your perspective. David, you are a legislator. I understand some laws have been passed, but they didn't have funding. Am I right about that?
That's yes, that is correct. I think in the short sense, and I think the future also doesn't bode well for having money. We're looking at decreased revenues. Legislature has already been told out this 132nd session that's starting, you know, not to spend too much money. And I'll just relate a story, talking to the Waterville chief. He did have a federal grant. The thing that's really bad to me is all these grants are competitive. In state of Maine is huge, and a lot of people are looking for the money. They wanted to buy new gear. They wanted to buy non-PFAS gear. But unfortunately, in the specification of the grant, they had to buy the traditional gear because the federal restrictions wouldn't let them spend the money to buy the non-PFAS gear. So it's going to take a long time. Obviously, this didn't develop quickly, and it's not going to be solved quickly. And historically, in the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee, we did address issues. We did provide money for some gear extractors, washer dryers, and also carbon monoxide removal equipment, but it was nowhere near being able to address seriously the issue that we have around the state.
We'll go to Patrice, who is calling in from Portland. Patrice, I understand you're a family member of a firefighter.
I am.
Go right ahead.
And I was just wondering, and I guess he's touched on it a little bit, but legislation without funding is pointless. So that, I question why people would make legislation without funding. But what do we do now? Because you say, like, the gear that my family member is wearing is not good enough, and he's going to put it on every single time because they had to buy the cheaper gear. Like, what do we do now as a family member? Is there something we can buy for our family members to
put on? I don't think saying the gear isn't any good. The gear is actually really good. The gear that we wear today that has PFAS was designed to give us the ultimate protection. And the moisture barrier in the turnout gear, that's the issue. So there is something you can do is if you know who the manufacturer is of that gear, you could actually purchase a PFAS-free moisture barrier for the gear as long as it won't violate the NFPA standards of that gear. those manufacturers will do that.
And I guess Patrice was going to ask Russ if she knows if there's some sort of like undergarment that they might people might be able to wear to protect them.
There really is. I mean, there really isn't. The deal with firefighting comes down to that's an inherently dangerous job, and we're exposed to hundreds of carcinogenic compounds in a fire. PFAS is one of the small ones that maybe or is a problem for us. But what I would recommend is that you ask your loved one to follow the guidelines that are put out by all of these researchers that are out there, and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network provides it on their website. There's 15 action items, and it really starts basically with taking care of yourself every single day, all the way to making sure that you do on-scene decon or preliminary exposure reduction. I watch the news. I see firefighters all the time in fires with no SCBA.
One of the worst
self-contained breathing apparatus. So they're in there working. They're doing overhaul. They're not wearing their self-contained breathing apparatus. You know, our skin, our lungs are huge places for this stuff to get absorbed. And if we can chip away at all of the other exposures as well as PFAS at the same time, we'll reduce the cancer rates among firefighters. But it's a mountain. It's a lot to get over. There's a lot of areas where we're exposed. PFAS being one of them.
Dr. Graber.
Yeah, just to add to that, and so many good points the Chief Oscar just made. Gear is there to protect firefighters from the many threats of the fire and the response. It needs to be worn throughout the response, including those activities when the fire is down and they're doing cleanup and scavenging and overhaul. Also, firefighters should keep gear for those purposes, right? We have the tradition of wearing our gear for the family picnic and the pancake breakfast. That needs to stop. Firefighters can keep a clean set of old gear for those functions because the gear, it is so much the personality and the face of the fire service, right? People want to see their firefighters in the parade in their gears, but keep a clean set for that. Let's use our gear where we need to use it and do the best that we can to reduce our exposure.
Patrice, thanks for your call. I have an email here from Rob. Having worked in the environmental arena, my concern is that the fluorine bond is so strong and difficult to break down. And while the EPA is proposing regulating a few of the compounds, there are thousands that are in use. I hope we ban whole classes of PFAS and PFOS versus just a couple of species. And I'll turn back to you, Dr. Graber. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think that the framework that's most useful is essential use. You know, these chemicals do things that nothing else does. And we have to, over time, develop replacements that work and do not cause our environment and humans harm. In the meanwhile, there are essential uses we're not going to be able to get away from immediately. But we have to start reducing our use of these chemicals. We have to move to an essential use framework. And we have to do as much as we can to reduce our exposure.
All right. And I'm going to stay with you. Something that Marina said at the beginning of the program, she talked about she's doing work about other industries as well, where we might have this contamination. And I was wondering, Dr. Graber, if you could talk about what those might be. Because Maine has a long manufacturing tradition. What other kind of employees, what other kind of workers are likely exposed to forever chemicals such as PFAS?
Well, there has been a lot of work looking at different kinds of workers. Clearly, firefighters have some increases in PFAS, ski wax workers in industries that use and produce PFAS need to be investigated. Aerospace, automotive, construction, electronics, all of these use PFAS. Of course, there's an industry that produces PFAS, and those production workers have some of the highest levels. People can be exposed from PFAS in the many, many, many types of products that PFAS are used in. When you think about PFAS, you think about kind of a screen between people or a product in the environment. So anything like the stain-resistant carpets, the pans, stick-proof pans, mascara, waterproof mascara, fast food containers, there's a myriad of products these are used in.
All right. Well, what are your questions about these forever chemicals and their use in firefighting? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. What can be done about the hazards of PFAS and the firefighting service, especially for fire departments with limited budgets, all those small departments all over Maine? My guest today, David LaFountain, former fire chief and state legislator, Chief Russ Osgood, who's a Gunquitz fire chief, and he's also involved with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and Dr. Judith Graber, occupational and environmental epidemiologist with the Rutgers School of Public Health and a resident of Hollowell. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Calling in now is James Anderson, who's a senior advisor with the University of Maine Advanced Structures and Composite Center. Thanks so much for joining us, James.
Thank you, Jennifer. Nice to talk to you.
I know that there's all sorts of creative thinking going on up there at the UMaine Composites Center, and I'm wondering what you've been thinking about in terms of this issue, PFAS and firefighter foam.
Well, yes, my day job, so to speak, is with the Advanced Structures and Composites Center, mostly in large-scale 3D printing. And during that work, I got to collaborate with our Process Development Center next door, which does a lot of work with nanocellulose, which has applications, medical applications, and paper-making applications. But it's a very unique material, which basically causes water to form like a gel. And that sort of started the wheels turning, thinking about whether this could be beneficial in firefighting applications.
And have you discovered that it is? Where are you in the research?
Well, we've had a lot of help from the Millbridge Fire Department and Orono Fire Department doing some testing over the last year or two. And, you know, some basic testing we did, for example, was we set two by fours on fire. One we extinguished with plain water, one we extinguished with the mixture of the water and the nanocellulose, and then we tried to reignite them. The one that was extinguished with water took 1 minute to reignite. The one that was extinguished with the gel took 11 minutes to reignite. So it does a really good job of coating the material and preventing reignition, which is a benefit when it comes to firefighting.
So it sounds to me like you're hopeful that this will be a viable alternative to firefighting foam.
I think it will, yes. We're looking at it for municipal firefighting. And we, as I said, we've done several trials with Millbridge and Orono fire departments. It would also be very useful in fire extinguishers because it's all pre-mixed and that makes integration slightly easier. Wildland firefighting is another obvious one. You know, you're not throwing chemicals back in the environment. You're putting nanocellulose, which comes from trees. It's just a very, very finely ground sawdust, effectively, which has these very unique properties when it comes to interactions with water. So we know it's safe, and we know it functions well. So we're just working now through some trials to sort of perfect the formulations and look at doing some preliminary testing against sort of nationally recognized standards.
Well, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about this. This is James Anderson with the UMaine Advanced Structures and Composites Center. Let's see, we have an email coming in here from Emily. Is the water from cleaning the equipment going into the stormwater system, or does their fire station drain connect to the municipal wastewater treatment system? If the latter, does the wastewater system have a good method of removing PFAS? My guess is no. And if not, does it enter the river or ocean? Some towns take their drinking water from the river. So what's dumped upstream, which has always been important, is even more serious with PFAS. Who wants to take this one? David?
I think from being a state instructor, I get around the state and see what the departments look at. So far, I don't think we've addressed some of the really small firehouses that populate the state. There are some firehouses that don't even have water. I've had to have some departments, after doing training, pull into one of the local farms to get to the milk parlor so they could refill their truck with water. So very primitive. Most of the time, you know, the cities probably have some kind of collection. I know Waterville, there'll be some collection before it gets out into the, it won't go into the river, it will go into the sewer system. And usually we'd have to notify the sewer district that something's coming their way. But for the majority, I believe, of the firehouses, this is going out into the street, or it's going to the backyard or whatever they have for a system. I don't think anything ever, but mostly has never been engineered to handle the runoff.
And still not a great system since so many people in Maine depend on wells.
Absolutely.
That's been one of my concerns for a while. Here in Ogunquit, we looked at our training center. We had a training center that's been around for a while. It was shared by a whole bunch of agencies in the area. And there was some training that was done with foam there. When I became fire chief, I left the city of Portsmouth, which I was on Pease Air Force Base, so I had some understanding that this was becoming a big issue. I tested the well at our public works facility and the groundwater at the training facility and found it in the groundwater, surface water, and worked with DEP. We've done testing of all the wells in the area. And the thing that stood out to me was it wasn't the PFAS from AFFF foams that we were finding. And that was something that and nothing was over the EPA, newest EPA threshold. So everything's very low. But talking about it, I found that a lot of this is just can be leaching out from everybody's septic systems because you're ingesting it, you're using it in your homes, you're using it in makeup, and it's getting into the environment. So I don't think that it's completely fair to blame all of the PFAS issue on firefighting and AFFF foam, although that is a big culprit, I no doubt about it. It is so prevalent in our environment that I think that it's here to stay, and people need to understand that you probably should get your well tested for it. One of my concerns that Marina addressed started to address in one of her articles was these small fire departments that operate on wells. We all trained with PFAS containing AFFF when we purchased it. And a lot of that was done around the firehouse. So if your well's in the backyard of the firehouse and you pumped out 30 or 40 gallons of foam concentrate onto that lawn, and now it's seeped into that well, maybe you might want to know that so you can stop ingesting those compounds, because that's a big area of how we end up with this stuff in our system. So if you have a fire department and you're on a well, you should probably test your well water for PFAS.
It sounds to me like you all have been working on this for a long time, but I think this issue really rose to the public's attention when we had the big accident in Brunswick, when firefighting foam was released in one of those hangars. And David, I'm wondering what lessons you want, lessons you take from what happened in Brunswick.
Well, I think it's another level of trying to mitigate effectively and have being a good neighbor. How about that? Where there are, we talked about peas a little bit. I can tell you that dealing with the government, trying to do inspections and finding out what's in there, the local fire department has no jurisdiction. They're going to do, I can't go in the Waterville post office as a fire chief and tell them they have code violations. That's not in my jurisdiction. So here we have a former naval air station, and up in Loring, I'm sure, has got to be the same thing, except maybe even worse, because they house Bangor, houses KC-135s. Each one of those airplanes capable of carrying 31,000 gallons of fuel. Just have an accident in one plane. The fire department's got to mitigate successfully that situation. Right now, the only tool in their toolbox is Class B foam. I'm curious about the cellulose extinguishing agent that he tried on 2x4s, but that's a Class A fire. Testing needs to be done on Class B fires to see if there's a use there. But I think with Brunswick, they're finding control issues. I've been talking with Senate President Matty Daughtry about some of the issues that they've had. Obviously, they've got a lot of water issues now that people are concerned about, and rightly so, that there's so much concentrate went out into the environment that cleaning it up is going to be a long-term solution there that and other people are going to have to take a look at that to see what's being done. DEP's got their hands full, I'm sure, to try to prove to people that the water that they're drinking is safe. And what can be more critical than you can't drink the water, or you can't, up here in Fairfield, if you shoot a deer or a moose, you can't eat it. If you catch a fish, you can't eat it. And this is supposedly just the tip of the iceberg.
Dr. Graber.
Just coming back to some points that were made earlier, there's a lot of AFFF stored around in small stations and large stations, but we don't know how much we have stored around the state and an inventory of what that is and a stepped plan, whether it's safe containment in place towards eventual removal, it is really needed. And I have to say, Maine government has done an outstanding job responding to biosolids and PFAS in general and kind of refocusing or expanding the focus to include the AFFF issue and firefighters, I think, is a logical next step. It's certainly in some of the recommendations that have come out of the working groups, and it would be great to see some of that move forward.
Okay, and Dr. Graber, I know we're short on time, so I know that you wanted to sort of restate things that people who are working as volunteer firefighters or municipal employees, firefighters, can do to make sure that no matter what kind of compound they're using, no matter what kind of fire they're fighting, they can mitigate their cancer risk.
And Chief Osgood talked about the Lavender Ribbon Report. That's going to be up on a number of websites, but there are really 11 evidence-based recommendations. The first set are about reducing that exposure after a fire. The next set are about reducing that exposure in the firehouse on yourself, like showering within an hour and cleaning the gear. And the last set, as Chief Osgood talked about, are about that personal health, reducing alcohol and tobacco use, improving your diet, and getting health monitoring, and monitoring your exposures over time. And
And I have
I'd
to
love if we did what chiefs could add to that.
well, I wanted to ask the chiefs. Already we've reported on how difficult it is for many fire departments to recruit firefighters. This situation can't be helping. Chief Osgood?
I think when people see that there's these enormous health risks to firefighting, they may take another look at doing it for free. Volunteers, and here in Ogunquit, we have very few volunteers. We have a call staff. It's very small. I think that that is the scenario really across the state. There's a few places around me that do really well, and that's great, but I think when we look at smaller communities and the aging population and the risks and the training and everything that we need, it's really becoming more and more difficult to recruit people to help out for either little or no money.
David, anything to add to that?
I think, again, looking across the state, I've been to many fire departments where, yes, they have four firefighters that are trained to go into burning buildings. I found in Waterville, we used to have four companies of part-time firefighters, call firefighters, 15 people each. And over the last 35 years or so, those numbers have dwindled to they're trying to keep two companies up and running. It is hard if somebody wants to help their community and help the firemen. They usually just want to help out with pulling fire hose and squirting water. They're not signing up really. They don't understand about the hazardous materials. They don't understand about a lot of the things that can hurt them. And this cancer stuff is one. Cancer wasn't on the radar when I started. But I've attended a lot of funerals of friends who have got cancer and have died. And I just want to say, I contracted a cancer that took one of my friends. The fortunate thing for me, it was 10 years after the fact, and the cancer prevention or the cancer treatment has gotten better. So it's lucky for me. But I think firefighters have to wake up and be aware that they can do stuff to help themselves. But I think we have to get the attention of people in the government and say, this is a serious problem, and we have to find funding, serious funding to take care of it. However, again, there's competition with housing and substance use and mental health and all these other things
These are
that
great points,
are
but I
affected.
have to cut you off because we're out of time. thank you all for being here. The voice you just heard, David LaFountain, former state senator from Winslow and a retired fire chief. Also with us, Dr. Judith Graber with Rutgers and a resident of Maine, and Chief Russ Osgood from Ogunquit. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.